Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo. Goes for goal. Oh, what a goal. Hiratoshi Nakata with a scream.
Okay, so we go, episode 20. It's a landmark occasion, I think. Yeah, it is 20. Landmark occasion. Welcome again, people. We have the football manager expert and whiz, according to nobody, Maz. How are you, Maz?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I mean, according to you, you gave me that title.
I'm only going from the information you gave me, man, from university. That's all. That's what I'm saying. So my memory is solid. And we have one and only prince of being hurt by football on multiple occasions, Carlisle Baker Jackson. CJ, how's it going?
We're definitely changing this in the next season.
Both of you keep saying this. It's never changing. It's just going to stick.
This is terrible. Look,
it helps the listener understand and get your framing. I don't know how a football manager helps Maz, but you know how we go. So, yeah, controversial weekend, as always. Never been a week where there's no controversy whatsoever. This time, we are focusing on three items, which is each one of the speakers have come up with their, I guess, as you remember it, if you're still listening to this podcast, a hot take or a judgment, so to say, as to what they've seen. Three of the topics are Southampton, VAR, of course, and the lovely Super League talk, which just keeps reviving itself every single week. So I guess until Ade joins us, which will be in about 5 to 10 minutes, which is cool, we will delve into the Southampton talk by Maz. Maz, I'm guessing, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but it'll be good to hear your hot take, so to say. What is your prediction apart from them getting relegated?
Yeah, I think we'd go round the table here. I think everyone will probably agree to Southampton probably favourites to go down alongside Bournemouth, but to touch on Southampton, I don't really know what direction they're headed in. And I mean, even I think Ralph was unlucky to get the sack because he was dealt with a bad hand.
Yeah, I agree with
from
you
the
that.
Beginning. I think this he did well to keep them up last season, even the season before, probably, because I think he's just been working miracles down there. If you look at their recruitment, look at the way they go about things, you just think, yeah, I just don't know where are they heading as a club, apart from the Championship. Maybe that's the best place for them to go back down, reset, and come back, start all over and come back again. Almost like what Newcastle have done it did in a way. Obviously, Southampton aren't as big as Newcastle, but I think the going down a league and set resetting the club and coming back and has helped them in a way. Don't get me wrong, a massive part of Newcastle's revival has been Mark Ashley going, but I think Southampton almost need that boost. I mean, it's just, I struggle to see which way they're going as a club. Even their transfer strategies, buying young, hasn't really helped them, but I don't see how it will help them. They need a bit of Premier League experience. They don't, apart from James Ward-Prowse, I don't really see much
quality,
much else in that squad.
Yeah,
Jan Brendan Eck has come back now from Aston Villa. He's on loan there as a bit of experience. Might not be the best centre back, but at least he has some experience. I think they're definitely the favourite to go down. I can't see anything else.
The weird thing I have is like Hasselhüttl, for example, like was there 4 years or so, and he admirably didn't perform well, but kind of just kept them going, but it's writing on the
but
wall.
Didn't he perform well? I think he performed with the squad he had.
In that sense,
recruitment they had. Mm-hmm. I do think he's a good manager. He improved them in a way. Some of the results they got against some big teams was surprising. Don't get me wrong, he did get passed by a few teams. I think it was Leicester. He got hammered by, and the season later he got hammered by. I think it was United.
Yeah,
passed them as well.
I mean, that was a bogey team for us. I mean, everyone's a bogey team for everyone, but you know my point.
Yeah. It's just, I think going down to the Championship will be a good thing for them. And I just hope, I actually like Southampton as a club. I used to anyway. But I just hope they aren't down in the Championship too long.
See, I don't think going down in the Championship will be good for them, because that place is a graveyard. So many times we're like, oh yeah, they'll just have like a one season bounce and they'll be up. I think Southampton are going to go down, right?
I mean, they're odds on to go, right? I mean, right now.
Yeah, I think the issue is, and we can maybe try and draw parallels here between the owners there and Chelsea, in that Chelsea had enough of a squad that whether they bought players or not, they're still able, when they're bad, to be mid-table. Southampton don't have that. They're just kids, right? So, and because in essence, what their owners have done, I wouldn't say is too dissimilar from what Todd's done in terms of, you know, Sport Republic owning Southampton, how they've tried to redesign the club in terms of making it more, like redesigning the scouting, changing, you know, like the youth setup into the first team and all of that. Like they've tried to address these things. I just don't know if they've done too much too soon in a club that needs more stability.
The way I saw it, like some of these signings are pretty much Championship level players. And I think, don't forget, there is also the bounce back money you get for being relegated. And that money should be reinvested into players. And they could reinvest into top quality Championship level players / Premier League battle players. And you say it's a graveyard there, but to be fair, they've got a nice stadium. From what I've seen, the facilities look decent around the club. So there's no reasons why they can't bounce back or they shouldn't bounce back. They're one of the top teams in the Championship. They did get relegated.
But then are we in danger of underestimating how competitive that league is? I mean, there's more matches.
Oh, no, I don't know. Yeah.
That's why I say that. Everyone, and I don't say that you're saying this, Maz, but a lot of people go, oh yeah, it's the Championship, they'll be back. Obviously, the Premier League is, I don't know if light years ahead is a fair enough comparison, but it's a lot quicker than the Championship, right? But the Championship is, oh, this is going to sound like I'm being really reductive, way more physical. And so I know a common complaint of teams often when they drop down is they're not used to, one, it's more games than the Premier League, and two, it's just a lot more physical. So often I think clubs drop down, but I don't think that many clubs often come back up at the first basket. Like, obviously it happens, ask Norwich. But I think what will happen is if they drop to the Championship, I think they'll probably be in there for a year or two before they come back up, because they need to essentially build an identity, right? They don't have one right now. Like, what are they? What do they play? Under Hasselhoedl, it was, you know, high-pressing football. That can also only go so far when, like you've mentioned, James Ward-Prowse, I can't remember the other player you said, are like kind of the senior figures there.
Bednarek.
Yeah, there's no one there. They've literally just had them. They've been asset stripped for years.
I mean, you look at their transfer record. They had, I'm looking at now, about 13 players departed with an income total of like 5 million euros, and they spent about 143 million euros in that time. So, and I think they were even the second highest in January, just because I think they're in a desperate situation.
So they're overpaying and probably putting people on stupid money, but that doesn't guarantee they'll be any good, right?
Yeah. You said, Matt, what did you say, Matt? Sorry?
So they just bought mediocre players with that money. So,
well, they needed something. So they bought a 20-year-old Ghanaian guy from Rennes, Kamaldeen Sulemana, quite highly rated, 25 million, pretty decent. They got a centre forward from Genk for like 28 million. I think he was Nigerian. So, I mean, I can see what they're doing, because, you know, the owners are Sports Football International or something like that. Essentially, the head of that was in charge of Brentford's, or was co-director of football at Brentford, and like installed Thomas Frank in the job. So I think he was trying to do something similar here, and it didn't work with Nathan Jones. That was just a terrible appointment, in my opinion. And we have now joining us, obviously, Valentine's Day. I appreciate the effort, Mr. Ade, the data analytics wizard. No worries. Hopefully your flowers are delivered. But we were just deliberating, you know, what direction Southampton are going. And Miles brought up quite a key point with regards to how possibly the best way they can reset is going to the Championship, and wonder what your thoughts are on that.
I don't know if they're far in the Premiership to start potentially thinking of them about in the Championship. They've still got, what, best part of 19 games in the Premiership to go.
Yep.
I just think...
they're 4 points behind Leeds. Yeah.
So they're 4 points behind Leeds, but the thing is, you know how these things work. I just feel like Jesse Marsh has got to prove and he's going to go there and all of a sudden it's just going to click. And he'll win games. Personally, that's what I think is going to happen. I think that the manager they had before didn't have a name or a pedigree to go with, but I think they do have some good young players who probably will get behind Marsh despite him losing his job very, very quickly. And I think what he's learned at Leeds, he's got a different skill set at Southampton to play with, and I think it might work. I don't want to really think of them as a Championship team yet. I think they'll stay. I personally think they might stay up.
Certainly. Do you think, as a squad, they've got a good enough squad to beat the teams that are around there? So you've got ahead of them. You've got obviously Bournemouth, possibly on par with Southampton, has been one of the poorest teams at the moment. So you've got Everton, Leeds, West Ham, Wolves, Nottingham Forest, Leicester, possibly in danger above them, and Crystal Palace, big question mark. Probably, I think they'll be safe. Do you think Southampton got a better squad than and managers? Essentially, than teams above them to survive the drop. That's my biggest worry about them. I don't see them having a good enough team or manager under Jesse Marsh to beat the clubs and the squads above them.
I just think that Leeds potentially are probably going to get back into that drop zone now. I don't know if they're going to make it. Southampton, it's only 3 points, and I see Bournemouth being the bottom team at the end of this Premiership season. And yeah, the only then unknown quantity is whether Sean Dyche's game, they just decide to show up against Arsenal, or they're actually going to do anything. I mean, from the looks of it, they lost against Liverpool. It was a howler from Jordan Pickford, you know, for the first goal. And just, I don't know if Everton are going to beat the drop either. So I feel Southampton could leapfrog them. I don't know the fixture list, but I know football has a way of writing weird stories, and the fact that he's left the club and come back to another club so quickly and he was experiencing such a difficult time at that club, I think he might get Southampton back into the running. But as I said, it's just a hunch, and your point is very valid. I don't think from a squad perspective they're better equipped than any of the teams. They're probably better equipped than Bournemouth, but that's probably the only side. So
yeah,
I can see why you say they're
Bournemouth and Southampton, to be fair.
I just want to ask a quick question here. Does this mean the respect on Steve Cooper's name at Forest?
We've just omitted him completely, haven't we? After what magic he's done. I mean, admittedly, it's taken 30 players, but, you know, he's done it.
Because we were mocking him at the beginning, saying we don't know where this is going. And obviously, I'm not saying they're out of the woods just yet. Because, like you said, Maz, looking at all the teams that are there, yeah, anything can happen, right? You just need someone to go on a run. Like, yeah, it's the Premier League, right? You literally, all someone needs to do is go on a run of like 3 wins. All those games essentially between 20th to maybe 13th, 6 pointers, all of them.
I think Forest did well to bang the points early on. Now they're starting to linger around the danger zone. I think there's a big game on the weekend. It's Leeds and Everton. So that could just totally change the momentum for one of these sides. I can see either one of these going on a run. These are
Wolves did well with the new manager, to be fair. They've won like 3 out of the last 5 games.
Yeah. Wolves have a good squad.
Yeah, I was going to say they've got a good squad, yeah.
Wolves have players that can go into teams from 10th and upward. And I mean walk into their squad. Ruben Neves is, Adama Traore, even though he's not rated the highest. They've got good players. They've got, what's his name?
Neto.
Nunes, Neto.
They bought that guy, didn't they?
They've got good players in that squad. I just don't see them going down. I just think they needed a manager to start getting the best out of the team. And especially that result on the weekend, coming back to win despite the referee.
That was insane.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll touch on that. Yeah. For you, CJ, a question on West Ham. What do you reckon? Because they're still lingering there as well. 20 points and they are 2 points ahead of Everton, who are in 18th. Do you feel about, are West Ham too good to go down? That was to CJ, if he's awake. No. All right. Maz, what do you think? West Ham?
I think they've got a good enough squad. It's whether if they can get over the line. I worry about West Ham because when they've got a big enough squad, it's whether David Moyes can get enough out of the players. I think he might be one of those that the players have become a bit bored of the usual like tactics, and they may need a little freshen up. So I'd be interesting to see how long the West Ham board with bad results before they potentially get a new manager in. But then we say that, I don't even see any decent managers out there that would take that job on. And I can never think of any good managers if David Moyes did leave.
I mean,
because they were too big of a club to go down.
You see, this name.
So are Leeds, so are Everton.
You say clubs are too big to go down. Nah. I think we've got to stop saying that, because you got to put in the effort, right? You've got to put in the work. And in the case of Everton, I mean, the way that they narrowly escaped it last season, you know, word to Frank Lampard. And nowadays, I still think they're still, like, obviously, apart from beating Arsenal, I'm still not convinced because, yeah, the way they were again, and I know derby games form goes out the window and that, but, yeah, they didn't really look like they kind of doing much, yeah. Liverpool...
Of the three... Who would you put your money on going down out of these clubs, like predictions?
I think the problem is, though, right, is we're trying to think about these teams putting together like a decent run or being consistent. They're all as inconsistent as each other.
That's true.
And with each week, it actually gets harder to try and work out who might go down. Because, I mean, at the beginning of the season, I would have probably said Leicester, Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, right? I think that's what I said. I can't remember. I'd have to double check the pod.
We'll have to dive into
it. Yeah, it's. I think it's too hard. I mean, like you said about Marsh, right? He's getting another bite at the cherry in terms of literally walking out of one door and walking straight into another. I'm hoping that they'll back him, whether they get relegated or not. So yeah, let's see. I think it will be definitely get interesting. I think just as much as people talk focusing about the top of the table, the bottom of the table is actually to some degree probably more interesting. I know I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm saying that, but because it's a mess. It's actually a mess.
So I guess the next question, it'll be open, I guess, to Ade or Maz or Ansi. I mean, feel free to jump in. But can we now look at, you know, there was a discussion at some point around managers, the pool of talent is there. They can grab a championship level manager who's able to step up. And Nathan Jones is given the opportunity. You know, the stats were fantastic at Luton, and when he got the chance in the Premier League, he basically turned to someone else, started going on some weird tangent rants. I don't know, it just doesn't work. Is it a one-off?
But I will say here, being a good manager at a lower rated club and then coming to relegation battling team, like, that's just unfair. I think he's a good manager. I mean, the stats obviously behind him are impressive. I'm not going to defend some of his weirdness. The fact that he constantly referred to the team as they, rather than like we. I mean, quickest way to alienate yourself from everyone else. I mean, I'm sure he might have had his reasons for doing that mentally, but I don't think it worked. I just think, I mean, I've always thought generally that the talent managerial in this country kind of sucks based on how few English, British managers there are in the game. I think it's harsher to say that for him, right? Because if he was going to say, I don't know, like, let's say like a Brighton, right, where they're a bit more stable, or like Palace or Leicester, then maybe it's an easier ask. But when clubs are in like relegation form, right, battling relegation, I think it's more about you being maybe more a people person than a tactic person, because initially you're struggling to get your ideas across other than we need to tighten up at the back, not concede too many and still be able to score. You don't have the full time to implement all your tactics, not when you're trying to just stay in the league. So, I don't know. I think maybe if he had more time, if Southampton weren't so precarious, then yeah. But I think he kind of off got set up to fail, to be honest.
I'm going to jump in and let Ade go. My point, Ade, just on this, is like, he was in the interview too. It wasn't like one-sided. So, yeah.
I think we underestimate the jump that it is to go to the other league. I think the standard and level of quality of manager, of player. He wasn't set to fail, but it is a tough ask and you have to have a lot. The thing is, Luton, he was probably able to manage and just coach the team. In the Premiership, being a manager of a team, even if you're just the first team coach, what it comes with, all the other stuff it comes with, it could knock you off your stride. You don't have that time to be a specialist in taking out a team and saying, right, we're going to do this, we're going to work on these drills, we're going to do these tactics. And then as well, what you think you may be doing well in other divisions, teams have weaponry that can just totally blow away tactical game plans, you know, in one blow. Like Man City, they have a whole different plethora of weapons. You try and defend on a low block with them, they've got other players that can do it. So it's a totally different ask. And I think every manager needs to have a period of grace in the Premier League where they learn about how to manage in this league. And I just don't think it's unfair to say that his step up was bad. Unfortunately, managers are never going to get the time they need to learn as well as they can. They're probably better off going to be, like what Arteta's done, being assistants in this league to get the to cut their teeth and then jumping in later, or really going for a club where, like Potter did, they're really going to give you that time and back you, and you're going to have full trust of the board to implement your ideas, and then you can change and try and progress and keep a team. But unfortunately, it's the most unforgiving, and I think we can say they didn't give him enough time, and I don't think they gave him enough time, but it's just testament to what it is to manage in this league. I mean, if you look at the full team of 20, Lopetegui, he was managing a top four team in Spain, for example, and now he's managing Wolves. Hasenhüttl, before he came, was managing one of the top 10 teams in Germany, and then he came for Southampton. Managers that manage prestigious clubs in other countries come here and manage the team that's fighting relegation. So to ask him to come from Luton and then do magic, it's a tough ask.
Very good point, sir. I mean, to wrap up, Maz, on this point. So are we to blame players who are young being recruited in that view? There was a clear strategy in place at the start of season to recruit these under 21-year-old City players primarily. I think they got four of them. And you can probably direct that towards Joe Shields, who was the director of football for 6 months at Southampton, recruited from City as well. And he's now at Chelsea. Surprise, surprise. So do you blame, who is to blame? I guess my question is to you, Maz. Like, do you blame the manager for kind of messing around for too long, not putting the authority on the team? Or do you also have to blame the players to a certain extent, even though?
I think I can't blame the manager. I mean, he's already given 14 games. Not really enough to implement your idea or strategy on the team. It was given a transfer window, but Southampton were pretty wild in the transfer window, and he didn't get a chance to even bed that new team in. So I think it's a difficult one. I think Southampton's issues have been, as I said earlier, have been a long time coming. I think they've been, I think Ralph who's
love it, Hasenhüttl.
Yeah, leave that, Ralph. Yeah, I think he's worked miracles to get them to where they were, considering the squad they have or had. So I think it's been a couple of seasons of bad transfer strategies and misplaced judgment and failing players that were never going to improve or aren't good enough to play in the Premier League. And obviously didn't help adding Nathan Jones onto that, who's never managed the Premier League either. I think, but you can't put the whole blame on him. I think it's a group. It's a group to put it
lightly.
To be nice, yeah. To be nice to.
That's interesting. I think they're, like you said, I think they're odds on to go down. To be honest, I just don't see them recovering. But it seems like potentially, Ade has view that it might just click for Jesse Marsh. But we await to see what happens. I guess we jump to the other controversial topic, which is the lovely referees. So we've seen over the weekend there was multiple issues that happened. I think it was the Palace Brighton game, there was obviously the Arsenal game, there was a third one which I completely escaped my mind around a contentious decision.
Did you say Brighton Palace?
Yeah, Brighton Palace, then the Arsenal, and then the Wolves game, when Lemina basically went to ask the referee as to why he was not given a foul. So two or three Wolves players surrounded the referee, and then he just booked Lemina, because apparently the...
Oh, and then West Ham Chelsea as well.
Yeah, that's true. But I have a bit of sympathy for that, but I got in an argument with John and Leon about that. However, it could be that I'm wrong. Yeah, I guess we go to Carlisle, and we can start. I mean, we were discussing this just as the pod was starting, but question to you is, what do you do with the refereeing situation now? And I think it links into your Super League point, which you wanted to bring up as well.
It's accountability, right? I think ultimately that's what it is. It's accountability, because week in, week out, referees can make mistakes. It might get glossed over. It might get ignored. It depends. Obviously, what happened over the weekend was so bad that apologies had to be made to one or two Premier League clubs. But for me, until we get referees either being mic'd up on the pitch, explaining their decisions and why in regards to VAR, the same way you get it in NFL, the same way you get it in rugby, the same way you'll get it in cricket, it's not going to get better. We're just going to end up with these situations where it happens more and more and more. Because effectively what you're saying is you can make a mistake or you can do the wrong thing. And it's okay, because we'll just trot you out. Maybe not the next week. We might put you on the sidelines for a week or two, but we'll just roll you out silently and then we'll just carry on as before. So I think until there's actual accountability, don't get me wrong, I understand that people make mistakes. However, in the case of Lee Mason, not doing your job is not a mistake. That's either you're not good at your job, so you're incompetent, or you're being malicious. It's one or the other, or it's both. Because how do you forget to draw the lines?
So the question I have then from that to you, Adi, is like, I mean, I was listening to Gary Neville, and he basically just said, you know, continue using VAR. And like CJ's point around, how do you just not do the job that you, literally one thing that you have to do? Basically, what Neville was saying was that human error is always, you know, something that happens regardless of what you do. And like, sometimes the obvious is the last thing you see. But I mean, in this instance, for me, like even the Lemina decision, which was to send him off, that's not human error. That's conscious choice. Like, you just don't know what your role is and you can't execute your responsibilities properly, in my opinion, at least. So, yeah, what do you think about what Neville said and how this kind of...
The problem is, for me, with what Neville said, is there's some point where you have to stop accepting mediocrity when the stakes are so high, when you have to stop accepting mistakes when the stakes are so high. This is not the one of VAR. This is not year two. We're talking about 4 years down the line. We've seen it implemented in other countries, in the biggest tournament in the world, in the World Cup, in football tournament in the world. We've seen it implemented with success in all these places. Why here are we still talking about fundamental? I mean, if we're talking about subjective mistakes where there's a line and it's a call where by eye, you can't see something, or you're talking about, you know, incidents like, for example, I mean, for me, the two biggest bugbears are the Brighton one and the Arsenal one. This just, if it was the first mistake as well, you could maybe even say, you've come out, we've apologized, we made a mistake, and we're going to make amends to do it again. But when within, I mean, it's not even been a season, we're getting this type of mistakes again, you really have to question. If any other walk of life, for example, you are a bungee jump, the person who secures people when they're doing bungee jumps, and you secure the harnesses. And for one, maybe you might get let off if you accidentally don't buckle the harness securely on the person who's taking the jump and somebody gets injured. And then the next, or, you know, there's a casualty in terms of fatality. And then again, within 3 months, you don't do the same thing, which is a basic fundamental. You will have a checklist of these things. Everybody has a routine, a process they run through. To outright just disregard your process, that for me is unacceptable. And it's not, when we talk about accountability, it's not about just accountability in terms of giving someone basically effectively paid leave from the pressure of that job for a week. You know, it's about, okay, well, this person is not officiating anymore, is on a suspended sentence. Any other walk of life, people don't get those. If a police officer in the line of duty incorrectly injured two people, shot two people, they'll be suspended indefinitely for the foreseeable future. So I think we need to stop accepting it. Gary Neville, his comments really get to me, because I'm sure he's very aware of where the refereeing body are from. And ultimately, he's from a similar area. And not to say that they're in cahoots, but you wouldn't want to see them get too much in trouble. You can understand why he's sticking up for the people there. You never know. He could have friends. So he could be backing them. But ultimately, him talking about VAR, not to get rid of it, I agree on that point, because it is not the VAR that is making these errors. Yeah. And when we talk about what happened with Lamina, you know, Why can't someone review that and overturn that? Why can't we get an explanation for that decision? Why can't Wolves get an explanation? Thank God they won the game, but why can't they get an explanation? And the handball as well. It's just too many things that are happening. We've let it be that our game is the most subjective game played anywhere in Europe, whereas in everywhere else in Europe, there are defined rules and they don't seem to have the issues that we have here. And I don't understand it. And the only reason why it could be let to go on like this is to what CJ kind of mentioned when we spoke about this before amongst ourselves, is that we've enabled it and therefore it's acceptable. And it's just wrong to me. Sorry, I can't
get over it. That's a very, very valid point. I mean, Maz, before jumping to CJ, I know he has something to say. Maz, like, the one thing I don't understand is, like, we keep saying, oh, you know, there will be bumps in the road with technology. You know, the officials can do with extra resources. But at the same time, you need someone competent to actually use the machinery available or technology. So that's not happening. What can you do apart from replace the people?
I think it's issue is our standards of refereeing in this league is so far behind the rest of the world. I mean, you look at the World Cup, it wasn't a surprise that the English referees got used once or twice in the tournament compared to the other referees, because our standards are so low. Maybe it's a training issue. I think the matter of fact with Lee Mason is that it's not the first time he's done this or made such an error. This must be second or third time in the season. I mean, once you can understand his human error, second and third time, you think, hold on, what's going on here? Like, he needs to be...
And it's towards the same club. So
yes, there needs to be some sort of consequences for his actions. Don't get me wrong, like, human error is possible no matter what technology you put in place, there'll still be human error no matter what job you do. But what Ali just said, there's always a checklist you go through, and you just question, was there a checklist in place? Did they have a checklist in front of these screens to tell them what they need to do in the process they need to follow? To make sure of putting processes in place and training in place to improve the standards. But come back to Lee Mason, I think he needs some sort of reprimand, not just a week suspension, because that's not going to do anything. They need to get to the bottom of this and sort it. But to be fair, I like the idea of what they did in the World Cup. They had automated lines for offsides.
Yeah.
Why did they not put that in place? And it'll get rid of any question marks around the whether players offside or not, because you can't argue against it. There isn't a human drawing lines. There's
true.
And actually, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think that needs to be put in place. And also, I agree with CJ. I think I've always said this, that there needs to be communication between between what we see at home, the fans in the stadium, and what's going on in the VAR, because we don't know what they're talking about. Even when you're in the stadium, for example, you have no idea what decision's been made and why it's been.
And that's been like an ongoing issue for age since VAR has been there. It's been an ongoing issue.
Yeah, I mean, some stadiums don't even have screens yet. Crazy. You can't even see that it's gone to VAR. Old Trafford doesn't have screens, so you can't even tell if it's gone to VAR or not. You just have to go off the crowd, what the crowd's moods are. It's just crazy, baffled that we're still having these conversations. And VAR was supposed to get rid of controversy. If anything, it's added to it.
It's still. CJ, you were going to say something?
Oh, well, I just want to say, I think if it's how Webb in charge, right?
Yeah.
If he had sense, he'd go, okay, cool, I'm going to be real public about everything we're going to do now. So everyone knows how we're going to change things.
Oh, but he has been, to be fair to him. He did an interview with Sky Sports, and at least since he's been in charge, at least the apology's gone out. We've never had that in the past. He come out and explained why certain things have happened. And
the apology to me, though, that for me, apology is virtue signaling, right? Not because
but
confirms what's happened. Like, we all know mistakes were made. If they don't do anything apart from the apology, because it's like, you know, being in a car and running over a child, getting out and saying sorry, and then being like, but I said sorry, so that's it. Well, no, there's a punishment for that. Like, if I was drunk and I did that, you know, I'd get jail time, rightfully so. Like, for me personally, I'm not calling for Lee Mason to lose his job.
No.
I don't think he should be involved in VAR for the rest of the season. They should take him off it, because like we said before, this isn't the first time this mistake has happened. It's not the first time it's been against the same team. And if you want to try and show that you were trying to have accountability, and if people mess up, that there will be things in place that doesn't happen again, how you manage him going forward is the biggest test.
Yeah, Yeah, but I think Howard has only been in charge not that long. I think it's midway through the season he was put in charge. But I think we need to give him time to change things. I think things will change and get better. And there have been talks of him stamping his putting his stamp on refereeing. And he was a good referee, to be fair. Out of all the interim referees we've had.
My issue with this is, and I don't disagree with you, I do think he will put his stamp on it. The problem is, and I mean, it's a bigger problem than I think he can actually solve, is it comes down to refereeing in this country in general. I don't think as a country we put pride, respect, emphasis on people actually wanting to be referees. So, you know, there's no incentive for people to do it, right?
Get harassed.
Because I feel like half of these referees are the same referees that when I was a kid and first started watching football are still refereeing. They're all dinosaurs now.
No one's been referee because you just get arrested every 24 hours. Even down to Sunday league level.
There was an article I read on the BBC. It's absolutely horrific, some of the abuse they get. Like, some of them, like, players will swing. They've been, like, chased around car parks and stuff like that. So, like, I'm not in any way saying that's right. But I think if we did more to respect on being a referee, and I don't think we do, right? And a lot of it is, you know, this lackadaisical, but it adds to the spirit of the game when mistakes are made because, ooh, someone scored a last gasp winner. Oh, actually, it's been ruled out when actually it was perfectly valid. That's not cool. So that's a legitimate goal you've just chalked off. But we dress it up as entertainment. That's not entertainment. No, like, I can't be at work, not do my job. I don't think you're disagreeing with me, by the way, but I can't be at work, not do my job. And then when someone goes, oh, why haven't you done that? Just go and don't reply. Yeah, or just don't reply. Because the fact that referees are allowed to hide behind someone, they never speak for what they do.
I know, I think they need to have a press conference, pretty much.
Interview them pitch side. Interview them. We have this whole Sky Sports where the managers afterwards are all chatty patty, and Gary Neville and Roy Keane are all hee hee ha ha with Ten Hag after the game. Bring the ref over too. Tell me why that foul on Eriksen by Odegaard was a foul. Please, like, you have to do that, right? Because this isn't because I want them to be scared to make decisions. It's okay if you make a mistake. It's standing by it, right? Because all it does is just give the impression that you're a grown adult, you can do something wrong, and then there's nothing happens.
Adi, what were you going to say?
I totally agree. I think they need to. That's where accountability starts. Take away the barrier, the safety barrier that they currently have. That's where true accountability comes in. So, okay, if you're only going to sack them for 1 week, that when you get put in a situation where you know you're going to have to justify something, it instantly makes you better at your job. I know in my line of work, where you say to people, we're going to start reviewing the data on what you've done and actually sitting down every time you finish the campaign or whatnot and saying, right, okay, we're going to look at how well this campaign is done and effectively judge performance based on it. When you're supposed to review, you start to see people buckle up and make the right call. And even before they do things, they're more considerate of what they should be doing and how they should be doing it. And I think that's what we need. We've hidden them too much. And I think it comes down to just not only, this is the Premier League we're talking about. So this is that franchise. They have responsibility as well to match up to the rest of the leagues that they're competing with. Because we're still talking about this, but the Premier League, I mean, Man City, this is not me buying any financial loopholes that they've potentially and been involved in, but they're under scrutiny because they've dodged certain things, which are their obligation by the league. To be a part of this league, they have to do this. There's no investigation into the referees, and we're just appeased with this 1 week demotion, which is one, a little bit unfair on the championship, because are you basically saying that incompetence in this league is all right for it to be a league? So you have him for a week and then he comes back to this league? That's just totally a wrong approach.
And that goes back back to CJ's point about there's no incentive to have more refs because there aren't any.
It's just sending him demoted. It's like saying, I'm going to send you to another department for a week because you did rubbish in your job in this department. No, that's not what you do. So for me, I think there needs to be a change of personnel. I think there needs to be a change of tack where they need to either have in-match audio referees being interviewed, and then we'll get to a point where we see definite changes, because I just don't understand the disparity between and Masbury has raised a good point, English referees' involvement in European tournaments and world tournaments is becoming less and less and less. And when I was younger, there were quite a few English referees, especially like in the Champions League, that you see, you recognize them. Now it's becoming less and less. Why is that? Why is nobody picking up on that or trying to change?
We might need to take that back. I've just seen Marco Oliver line up for Paris PSG versus Bayern.
There will be a few. It's definitely, I think there's been times where I've seen at least 2 to 3 match day referees. I know it's becoming less on the world stage anyway, which is the most important.
Yeah, no, World Cup was
telling. Wenger spoke about this years ago. Everyone always said he used to talk about the refs too much and was just teasing about it. But I vividly remember him saying, the refs in this country are really bad. You might not believe me now, but when less and less of them start being in big international tournaments, we'll see. And I remember he said that years ago. This was maybe like 6 years before he retired, whatever, was forced out. And I was always like, okay, is he just saying this because he's like, he's got an axe to grind, or is he being serious? But yeah, the demise of English referees worldwide is very apparent to see. Very apparent. Same with, okay, Champions League, I know my man has just rolled out now, but they don't normally ref the final anymore.
Yeah.
They don't do it anymore.
Second yellow card for Lamine. Apparently, it's a rule now. You can only have 3 players around the referee. It's only just come and play.
What the hell is going on?
Yeah, so because he was the third player, he got a yellow card. So the same thing happened to someone else during the weekend.
It's ridiculous.
But they were talking about it somewhere yesterday. God, what I was watching.
I get that rule, except they need to implement it in a different way, which is if something happens, the captain, the same way in rugby, the captain has to go over and talk to the ref.
Yeah.
So the player that's done something and the captain there, the ref's basically like, player X, you've done this. So the captain, sort it out.
Yeah, but that's how it's
supposed to be. Yeah, I get the point of it, but doing it the way they're doing it is backwards.
There wasn't even
a right idea, wrong implementation.
Not even right communication, but just to wrap up, I mean, we're already like hitting close to an hour and we've got the quiz to go, but just off this point, CJ, around the Super League and stuff, I mean, we can have like a quick, you know, one round robin around the table, virtual table, so to say. But what was your point around the referees in Super League? Did you want to...
Oh, well, my thing was, you know, when the Super League first was announced last year, the year before, so much heralded instantaneous fanfare, which instantly was subdued within the course of 48 hours... I mean, I think that, to be honest, UEFA and FIFA probably are more scared than they're letting on, because there's certain problems that if they position themselves very well, they'd be able to clean up very easily, because all they can turn around and say is, we'll ensure that teams such as City have to play by the rules and we will run our audits on like your accounts and stuff. So we're not going to have, I mean, it will end up being not financial doping, but essentially, the money will still go to most of the bigger clubs, but you can pitch it as being a lot more equitable, because we will make sure that kind of stuff doesn't happen in our league. We will make sure people can't cheat, well, be accused of cheating by mismanaging funds and, you know, making money appear from where it shouldn't and stuff like that. And the second point as well is they can say, you see what happened in the Premier League this weekend? It never happened with us. Our referees, highest quality from around the world, blah, 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 blah. And I think if certain football associations, and this is more based at the FA, I'm not at liberty to discuss other ones that I'm not familiar with, don't kind of fix up. It might not be now, it might be in 5 years' time, but it will become more and more attractive, because fans from other clubs, not necessarily like Big Six or whatever you want to call it, but other fans that could maybe not be super competitive in the new Super League, but would make a good go of it and still, you know, it'd be entertaining for their fans, might go, I don't need to do this, right? Like, why do I have to stick with the Premier League when I'm not getting calls that I get, when I know that this other league I can take part in has all the up-to-date infrastructure, it's got the automatic VAR, it's even got, like, robot referees as linesmen or something on the side. Like, you know, I know it sounds a bit far-fetched now, but I think that
fairness,
those two things, coupled with the fact that the Super League, well, A22, could turn around to less well-off clubs, because remember, Bournemouth were poaching players from AC Milan.
Yeah.
I repeat, Bournemouth were poaching players from AC Milan. It would allow they can kind of hit them with the, we'll ensure that you get more money so you can develop your club. because it is stacked so in favour of the Premier League right now. We all know this. It's been like that for years. But the gap is getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
So I guess to Matt, like if I'm Maz, if you're Brighton, for example, and you're offered an extra 14 matches at like a decent level across the board to develop your brand. Oh, Maz is gone. God damn. Well, I guess to Adi, to you, if you're Brighton and you've been told, like, as I mentioned, you're able to develop your brand at a global stage and you're able to play some of, you know, not the top tier European sides, but some of them in a league format, and you're guaranteed about 7 extra games per season with revenue coming into your club and awareness. Are you going to say no?
Yeah. And that's why I think this campaign is building steam. And I think, you know, to CJ's point, that's why all these chinks in the armor, it's giving different USPs for the different leagues for this whole initiative. So the Spanish clubs and Italian clubs, they're already bought in by the fact that there's going to be more TV revenue. They just need something to appeal to the Premier League. That's basically it. That's the domino they need to fall to make this thing work, because of the clout that Premier League clubs currently have. And when the big clubs are already bought in, if you start to give the smaller clubs, lesser clubs, a reason to be involved, it's going to happen eventually. And I think if I was working as part of that ATT, I would definitely be using this weekend as testament to show, because 7 matches is not a lot, and the amount of revenue they're going to get, it's just like looking at a country and saying, we see your healthcare system and we see that you're waiting 10 hours just to get seen or something like that. We have state-of-the-art, the best doctors who can get you served straight away. You might as well just come into this private healthcare system.
Bigger audiences, bigger reach. You're developing the brand, and in that way, you're helping them, smaller clubs, reach that level that the top 6 are using, right? So in terms of revenues and things like that. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I think within the last 2 weeks, they've had 2 adverts on how to create a new marketplace by, you were not going to be able to mess around with your accounts. And by the way, we have some decent referees.
And remember as well, the court case that they won, which meant they can still proceed with it.
It's against UEFA, right?
Yeah, because you're able to, I think, to court, and basically we're trying to say that you're not able to do this at all because it goes against like our founding principles. And the court basically went, no,
this you're not a monopoly.
Yeah, and also, I know they have 10 principles. I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. They've promised to, you know, put money into grassroots football, women's football. You know, make it more accountable, stuff like that. So yeah, I think if some of these older bodies, because I mean, if I ask 5 people on the street, 10 people on the street, what does UEFA do? I don't think they'll be able to tell me. What does UEFA do?
Well, clearly they can't even manage the refereeing across the continent. So standards in that sense are ridiculous.
Yeah. I just think, I thought the Super League was pretty much dead and buried about 3-4 months ago. I don't think so anymore. It's going to keep trudging on.
I genuinely think football needs it, especially like the Premier League. Like, as much as a controversial opinion, like when I was discussing it over the weekend with the one and only Leon, we came to the conclusion, I think it's the time now where you need that league to kind of level out most of Europe. Because whatever this ruling is with City is going to cause some sort of a domino effect, because if they get relegated, then a lot of these other clubs are going to be like, great, but now we want more. That's just how it is. And then they're going to be appealed to by the new Super League. They can say, well, we have strict policies around finances that you need to adhere to before doing anything. So you never know what's going to happen at this stage. I mean, wait for this weekend's controversy to come through, which will be great. For some reason, Maz has disappeared. I don't know why or what happened. But we'll jump on to the quiz if we're happy. And as we can with when people join, CJ, in this case, you are first. You have true or false. You have who am I, which is a 3-clue format. As I mentioned, it's a new, section of the quiz, replaced the multiple choice one. And you have bang on the head, same tiered point system. So what do you want to go for?
Can I do true or false, please?
So your true or false question is, Matt Le Tissier never missed a Premier League penalty. Is this true or is this false?
True.
Unfortunately not. That is false. He's missed one in the Premier League and 47 out of 48 in all competitions. So it's a very tricky question. I'll give that. There's a lot of hype around him not missing a penalty. So anyway, 0 points. Adi, your poison.
Bang on the head.
Oh, shit. We go again. So your bang on the head question is, who won the Ballon d'Or in 2007? Who won the Ballon d'Or in 2007?
Seven. 2000, no, that's was it Kaká?
Great answer. Well done. 3 points. He's actually... All right, we go to the next one. 1 second. Just bringing it up. 3 points. Ade, DJ, your question, or your choices.
So it's bang on the head or who am I, right? Let's try who am I.
Okay, so you have three clues that go with this. Clue is basically, so who am I? My nation's highest ever goal scorer with 68 goals. Second clue, I've won La Liga with two different clubs. And your third clue is, I have provided the most assists for Messi in his entire career. Who am I?
Okay, so let me just... Nation's highest goal scorer with 68 goals.
I've won La Liga with two different clubs. And I've provided the most assists for Messi's entire career. What's it going to be?
Might have to give me another clue.
Man, the most I can say is maybe I'm South American.
I mean, I figured that one anyway. League of two clubs. I'm going to say Suarez.
It's a very good shout, and that's correct. 2 points. Maz, what the hell happened to you, mate?
Oh, battery died.
Oh, lovely. We're just on the quiz, and I'm going to finish with these two, and then I've got three questions for you as well. So if you can win the quiz at the end, you have a choice. So just be ready, I guess, and... wait till this duel finishes. Adi, what's your choice now? What are you going for?
Multiple choice.
So your multiple choice is basically who am I, which CJ had. So your who am I question is, I've played for three Premier League clubs in my career. I won the joint Premier League Golden Boot 2010-2011 alongside Carlos Tevez. And I have scored 5 Premier League goals in one game, which was against Blackburn. Who am I? 3 Premier League clubs, won the joint Premier League Golden Boot in 2010-2011 and scored 5 goals in one game, which was against Blackburn.
2010-2011 inside Tevez. 5 Premier League clubs.
Three clubs, 5. He scored 5 goals in one game against Blackburn. 2010-2011 Premier League Golden Boot winner alongside Carlos Tevez.
Is it Jermaine Defoe?
Wrong. It's Dimitar Berbatov. When he was at United, he won it at the same time, if I remember correctly. Maz, correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, so you are adding on 3, CJ on 2. So CJ, I think you have bang on the head, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct.
Can you name... Firstly, who has won the most Premier FA Cups as a manager, and give me the correct number of titles won?
It's Wenger.
Yes.
Mr. Papa Wenger himself.
How many is your bang on the head?
Is it 7?
And he's got the 3 points. Well done, sir. You are on 5 points. Ade, this is your chance. I mean, you've lost the quiz, unfortunately, but you've got a true or false. Your true or false is David Beckham has had a spell on loan at Blackburn Rovers. Is this true or is it
false?
Correct. Well done. Ade, you're going to go head to head with Maz for second place. Maz, I mean, well, CJ won another quiz. God damn, what is going on in 2023? Something's changing the water or something. I don't know.
Thank you.
Congrats. So I guess, well, Adi's got 4 points. Maz, to beat Addy, you have 3 questions as well. So your question number one, which I'm going to start with, is a true or false question. Did Clarence Sadow ever play for Sampdoria? Is that true or is that false? Clarence Sadow playing at Sampdoria.
I want to say true.
Final answer?
Yeah.
1 point to you. Well done, sir. Your second question, who am I? I have played with Edinson Cavani, Cesc Fabregas, and Kaká in my career. I've appeared at some of the top leagues in the world and in Europe, but excluding England. I now play my trade or final years of my career in Mexico. Who am I? Played with Cavani, Fabregas, and Kaká in my career. Appeared in the top leagues in Europe apart from England, and now play in Mexico. Take a wild guess.
I have no idea.
I'll give you another hint. The Kaká one is actually playing for Brazil. Like, they play together in Brazil, to help you. But no.
He's never played in England. And
no, Cavani and Fabregas. Different clubs, of course, but they've played in their careers together. Appeared in the top leagues apart from England, and now plays in Mexico. All right. Well, the answer was Dani Alves. I mean, there's an asterisk to whether he plays because he's in jail at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
So to, I guess, draw second place at Ade, you have your last question, which is the bang on the head, which is, who was Alex Ferguson's last ever signing? It's tailor-made for you as well.
I know this.
Ferguson's last ever signing.
Was it something like Zaha or something?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Correct. It was Wilfred Zaha. Last ever signing for about £28 million. So, Ade and Maz, you have tied second place. I have a tiebreaker if you want to. I mean, CJ is just looking in all his glory, just watching people scramble. I've got a tiebreaker here, and then we're going to write off quickly. So, can you give me... So, this between you two. Can you give me the name... Actually, let me rephrase this. Out of the keepers I'm going to name, can you tell me who hasn't scored a Premier League goal? So the names are Alisson, Schmeichel, Tim Howard, and Ederson. Out of these four goalkeepers, who hasn't scored a football goal? God damn.
Ederson.
Another draw. Ederson. Shit. All right. I need to bring up something else. Okay.
What should I say? I said it first.
I said it first.
All right. Fine.
I said it.
I'll give you that. Maz, you came second place. You've taken silver medal. Well done. Ade, last again, man. What is going on? 2023 has been crazy. CJ has been taking all the titles for some reason. All right. Thank you very much. Sorry, you said? Good luck with that. I mean, refs are everywhere across the board. But yeah, thanks for your time, guys. Appreciate it. And thanks for joining late. Ade, it was good. A good discussion. Maz, battery died. And CJ, ever present. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
No,
cheers, guys. Enjoy Champions League.
Thanks.
Bye.
Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo.